Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The information provided in this podcast episode is for entertainment purposes and is not medical advice. If you have any questions about your health, contact a medical professional. This content is strictly the opinions of Lucas Owen and is for informational and entertainment purposes only. The references, claims, and scientific information linked to any products are only applicable to those listeners who are based in the US. If you are outside the US, this information does not apply to you. It is not intended to provide medical advice or to take the place of medical advice or treatment from a personal physician. All viewers of this content are advised to consult with their doctors or qualified health professionals regarding specific health questions. Thank you for listening to the Boost Your Biology podcast. My name is Lucas Owen. I uncover the most cutting-edge health information on the planet, ranging from hormones, nutrition, supplementation, fat loss, biohacking, longevity, wellness, and a whole lot more. Welcome to the Boost Your Biology podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Boost Your Biology podcast. Today's special guest is the founder of ManTalks, an international organization dedicated to the personal and professional growth of men around the world. He is an entrepreneur, writer, keynote speaker, and facilitator. Ladies and gentlemen, we have Connor Beaton. Connor, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Awesome. So Connor, maybe did you want to share with my listeners, first of all, I'm really curious to know how you got into the men's health space. Talk us through that journey.
Yeah, I mean, the brief version of it was I was living a very different life before. You know, on paper, things looked great. I was traveling the world. I had a decent career. I had, you know, a great relationship with this woman that I was dating. Had the motorcycle and the Mustang, which maybe wasn't the car that everybody wants, but you know, I had the sort of like toys that I wanted and was sort of like, you know, gathering those things. But behind the scenes, things were just a mess. I was struggling with, you know, using booze and drugs and infidelity and lying and all this kind of stuff, and just felt relatively out of control. And all that came to a head, and I hit a sort of like classic rock bottom that, you know, a lot of us find ourselves in at some point in our life. And when that rock bottom hit, a couple of things happened that were pretty paramount. Number one, I had so much shame that I didn't want to tell people what was going on. And so I moved all my stuff into storage, lived in the back of my car for just over 2 weeks. Number two, when I did start to talk to people, I had a conversation with a man that I had gone through university with that I had known for a number of years. And when he and I talked, I just sort of laid all the cards out on the table. I just, full transparency, here's what's been going on. Here's how I've been struggling. You know, here's why my life has been a mess and has not been what it has appeared. And he listened to me. And when I was done, he kind of broke down and proceeded to tell me that he too had been struggling, so much so that he had tried to take his own life about 6 weeks before that conversation. And so it kind of, it was jarring for me, you know, it like really hit me because I realized that he and I knew everything about one another, except for some of the most important parts of our life, you know, which was how we were struggling and where we, you know, where we actually needed support as men. And then the third thing that happened was that I found a mentor who had been in my life for a number of years. He was in his late 70s and he became a huge support for me, not just, you know, to help me get my life back on track and sort of like piece myself back together, but he was pretty instrumental in helping me to find a new path. So he was very much like gifted in psychology and versed in Jungian psychology. And he basically took me under his wing. And for the next two and a half years, I apprenticed with him and he taught me how to work with people and how to use, you know, certain psychological and therapeutic modalities to work with people and to help us confront the shadow within us, our self-sabotage, our, you know, the things that kind of get in the way from having the type of love or relationships or, you know, career path or purpose that we ideally want. And so that's what got me into it. I didn't start my company until a couple of years later. I would actually go and work with Apple for a number of years first. And then I, you know, while working at Apple, I would start my company. And start the company that I run now 10 years later. So yeah, that's kind of what got me into it.
Yeah. It's a phenomenal story. And I think, one thing that comes up for me there, which is, the things that get in the way of being the man that we want to be. So this is something I'd love to explore in further detail with you, Connor, is, you know, you mentioned the self-sabotage. What are some of the common, I guess, obstacles that men face with their own internal noise and internal mind?
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest ones is there is our inner dialogue. You know, I've been working with men for a decade now in, you know, a bunch of different mediums. And one of the things that I've come to learn is the majority of men have a very volatile inner dialogue, and it might look like a man, you know, shaming himself. It might look like a man beating himself up. It might look like him, you know, constantly picking himself apart and criticizing himself and being hostile towards himself. But the majority of men have a really tough relationship with themselves. And so they sabotage oftentimes because they're following through on the narrative that they've told themselves internally. And that was me to a T. You know, I had this wicked inner critic and I was constantly bashing myself, you know, like, what the fuck is wrong with you? You're such a piece of shit. Like, you're always fucking up. You never get things right. Like, you're going to screw up this relationship. And that was something that nobody knew about. Nobody knew about the way that I spoke to myself. And so that's one of the big pieces. The other big piece is, and I don't see a lot of people talk about this, but the other big piece is that sabotage is a known path. And for a lot of people, the, you know, the common trope out, you know, out in the world is we sabotage to feel out of control. No, we sabotage to be in control. We sabotage because we know the path that's going to unfold when we sabotage. And the interesting thing about our brain and our psychology is that our brain is designed to be a pattern recognition machine. And so your brain works to recognize patterns in your life and in the world and with people. And then it works to move you towards the patterns that it already knows. And because it likes to predict things, it likes to know what's going to happen and what's going to unfold. And if your brain can't predict something, it doesn't want you to move towards that. It'll actually create resistance in moving you towards a new threshold or something that's unknown. And this is why change, whether it's relational change or psychological change or change within your career, is so challenging for a lot of people. So, you know, if you're a guy and you sabotage using porn or using, you know, texting women that you shouldn't be texting or online or using, you know, booze or weed or whatever it is, the interesting thing about that is that you're actually moving towards the known. You're moving towards a pattern and a cycle that you already know, right? So if weed is your form of sabotage or texting some chick is the form of sabotage, you know what's going to unfold. You know what it's going to feel like when you do it. You know what it's going to feel like after you do it the next morning when you feel hungover or you're exhausted or the shame kicks in. You know what happens when somebody finds out about it. Like, you actually know that whole pathway. It's all lined out in front of you. So for a lot of guys, they sabotage because that pathway that's already known feels safer than going towards the unknown, right? And like, there's this saying that our brains will always choose what is known, even if it's harmful, abusive, and unhealthy for us. So we have to actively choose to move towards the unknown, which, you know, is like putting the routines in place, the healthy habits, all those types of things. So those are a couple of the reasons. I'll just put out a couple more things very, very quickly. One is you might be somebody that's sabotaging because of a very real lack of self-esteem or self-worth. And that's often tied for a lot of men with childhood abuse, abandonment, neglect, or some form of trauma that hasn't been dealt with. And so a lot of men are walking around in the world sabotaging constantly because they actually haven't dealt with the abuse, neglect, abandonment, trauma that has caused that behavioral pattern in the first place. So I just wanted to put that one out there.
Yeah, no, some great points there, Connor. I'd love to expand upon the impact of pornography, specifically the modern men these days that are avoiding to actually seek out and go on, you know, actual real life dates, or perhaps they're using pornography as a crutch to regain that sense of control as a purely pleasure mechanism. Did you want to sort of expand upon what you're seeing in the, you know, the young men these days, how that's impacting their lives?
Yeah, I mean, this is a monster topic in a lot of ways, but and I think it's going to get more mainstream attention in the coming years. But porn does a couple of things for everybody, right? So if you're a guy and you're in a high stress environment, you know, you're in finance or you're in real estate or you just have a stressful life, right? You just are stressed out. Porn operates as a reset button for that stress, right? So you watch porn, you jerk off, you get off, and then your body actually does something interesting, which is after you climax, after you ejaculate, your body releases a whole bunch of neurochemicals that allows your system to move from a stressed out state into what's called a downregulated parasympathetic state. So after you climax, you and your brain and your body move into a much more relaxed state. And so for a lot of guys, porn has become this reset button anytime they're feeling something they don't want to feel. So if you're feeling bored or lonely or stressed out or anxious or, you know, angry, or you feel disconnected because you got in an argument with your, you know, your girlfriend or your wife, porn's a great way to hit the reset button and not have to deal with that feeling or that emotion anymore. So that's one piece. The second piece that I've started to talk about a lot that I haven't seen anybody else talk about is that porn creates what I call a pseudo attachment. And so in developmental psychology and in psychology, there's something called attachment theory. And it's basically the premise that we in our childhood, in our formative years, create the foundation for how we are going to attach to other people, AKA how we're going to build relationships with other people. And there can be a bunch of different disruptions or impasses that get in the way of us actually being able to attach and connect to other people in healthy, secure, meaningful ways. Now, porn is interesting because it circumvents the need for some of the very real risks and possible rejections that can happen in everyday relationships, right? And so if you think about going to approach a woman at a bar or, you know, initiating sex with your girlfriend or your wife, there's a possibility that one, that's going to be challenging. It could be confronting or uncomfortable. You could face rejection. She could say no, all that type of stuff. But there isn't any of that within pornography. And so it removes all of the barriers to entry and basically gives you the illusion that you're getting what you want, quote unquote, for free, without any risk, without having to be rejected. And what ends up happening is that it creates this pseudo attachment where if you use it long enough and, you know, under certain circumstances, you're going to feel like you need pornography at certain points in your life. And so I've worked with a lot of men who have had, whether you want to call it porn addiction or not, I've worked with a lot of men who have struggled with overusing porn, let's just put it that way. And what ends up happening is that when there's turmoil in their life, rather than calling a buddy and saying, hey, I'm struggling with this thing at work, or, you know, this thing's going on with my girlfriend and we're arguing about it again, I don't know what to do about it, he ends up just turning to porn. And how we know this is very simple, which is when you look at OnlyFans, which, by the way, in 2023, OnlyFans did about $2.7 billion in revenue, right? $2.7 billion in revenue. That means that men around the world are just forking out money to women, predominantly, right? It's just predominantly that exchange. And when you look at some of the top earners on OnlyFans and you get into some of the data, what's interesting is that many of the women that are getting the most amount of money are women that are sort of providing this girlfriend-like experience. They're not necessarily the most attractive women. They're kind of like the girl next door, but what they're really offering is connection. It's the intimacy that is oftentimes vacant within that man's life. And that's what attachment is, right? Attachment is you can go through, my mentor, my friend, Dewey Freeman says, at the base of attachment is knowing that you can go through a hard time with somebody and come out the other side okay. You can go through a conflict, you can go through a challenge, you can go through a disagreement, and you can come out the other side okay. And so porn and this quote-unquote relationships that end up getting built in porn produce this kind of pseudo-like relationship where that other person never tells you no. She meets all of your sexual needs and fantasies. You can search out anything that you want at any time. And there's sort of this overstimulation that can happen that ends up skewing our perspective of relationships. So I just said a bunch of stuff. I'll pause there. So I'm curious to get your thoughts as well. And I'm sure there's some direction that you want to take this piece.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that premise and that theory there around the pseudo attachment that pornography can offer men, I can definitely see that occurring amongst the younger generation quite a lot now. And I can definitely see how that can just be a form of like an escape, and it's like more of a comfort zone because it's, you know, in their own home, like they don't have to put in any effort. I think the other part there around that is the effort required to receive the reward or pleasure. There is no effort. The effort is a loss. The effort is a monetary, like it's literally just a financial exchange. So there's no actual discomfort that the man has to face initially to get the reward. And this is something where, you know, I truly believe that in order to receive a reward or pleasure, there needs to be some level of effort, you know, required to gain that reward. And if there isn't, that's where it really can skew the work ethic. And this is where I think pornography can massively dampen productivity. You say it can act as a reset. I think also part of that could be it can actually squash productivity. And I'm sure you've probably seen that with how pornography can impact a man's productivity in the workplace.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's like there was a period of time in my life where I definitely struggled with porn, you know, in my late teens, early 20s, it was a big challenge for me. You know, I like to semi joke around that I dabbled in every addiction, but didn't specialize in just one, you know? And so porn was something that was a big challenge for me. And it was hard to be productive, you know, because it was like, it was very often that as soon as I would start to feel that resistance, I don't, you know, this project is hard or this conversation that I have to have is challenging. My immediate response, my brain and body's immediate response was to want to go and watch porn because that helped me feel better. You know, it was my escape and that was so much easier. And so, you know, I think for a lot of young men, there's this inadvertent conditioning that can happen with pornography, that anytime something challenging starts to come up, porn is like this escape mechanism that you can use where you don't have to feel that way anymore. And it can dampen your productivity because you are constantly in this pleasure seeking mode. And that pleasure seeking mode is interesting because a lot of what we know about where we find meaning and where we find purpose as men within our existence is not to be found in pleasure seeking. It's actually going and doing the hard shit that we know we need to do, but don't necessarily want to do, right? It's like this morning, I did not want to go and work out, but I went and did it. And after I did it, it's like I felt exponentially better. So porn hijacks that whole system, that whole reward system that sort of trains us and teaches us to have discipline, right? Where we would normally have discipline of saying, okay, I'm going to circumvent this short-term pleasure for some type of long-term gain. Porn flips that on its head and kind of says, just take the short-term pleasure. Just get the pleasure right now. And you can keep hitting that button. And the more you hit that button, the harder it is to feel like you should go and invest your time in doing hard things like building a business, which, you know, can be incredibly hard. As I think, you know, and I know it can be very challenging, but it can also be incredibly rewarding in the challenge. So, you know, I think a lot of young men are starting to wake up because I think there's content out there and people having conversations like this that are saying like, hey, you know, buyer beware. Just because you can access, you know, more naked women in the span of a 2-hour porn session than your great grandfather did in his entire life doesn't mean that you should go do that, right? It doesn't mean that that's necessarily good for you. And I think the last thing that I would say is everything in moderation, right? I'm not here to say, you know, porn's the devil and you should never use pornography and it's going to, you know, rot your brain and, you know, destroy your libido and you'll never be able to get an erection again. That's not what I'm here to say. What I'm here to say is that your body is adaptive. And this is something that I wrote about in my book, because I wrote a book called Men's Work and I had a whole section on pornography, and our bodies will adapt. And so porn is this overconsumption experience where you get oversatiated, right? So you think about like Thanksgiving dinner or Christmas dinner, you go, you eat more than you normally do. And at the end of it, you're like, man, I'm stuffed. I took more calories in than I definitely needed, but your body can adjust to that. And it's not a big deal if you do that once in a while. But if you eat every single meal like it's Thanksgiving, your body can't actually keep up with that. And your body can't keep up with the amount of intake that you have going on, caloric intake. But with porn, it's the same thing. It's like if you watch porn, which is a very overstimulating thing once in a while, it's not terrible. Your body can adapt to it. But if it's the only method that you have, for example, for masturbating, then that could be problematic at some point, because I've definitely worked with men who couldn't masturbate without porn. And they I've worked with a lot of men who watched so much porn that they struggled to then initiate intimacy in their marriages or in their relationship, because it was so much easier to just go and watch porn than it was to actually go and have sex in real life. So, yes.
Yeah, even in addition to that, Connor, with when it comes to the impact on like physical performance, and this is something that I'm really passionate about as well, which is understanding like the biological effects following ejaculation. I'm sure you also understand the fact that prolactin surges, and then the ability to go and train super hard. Like there's that spark. Sexual energy is a very, very powerful form of energy. And I think you understand that as well. If a man releases his load or his ejaculate, what I see, and this is, personal experience, going to do a really, really hard workout all of a sudden becomes a lot harder. Like it's a lot more difficult. There's not as much like willpower. This is following like masturbation versus if we look at it from following actual sex or intercourse with a woman, in this situation, I actually don't find that it's as like depleting and I don't find that there's as much energy loss in that regard. And I actually feel sometimes like more rejuvenated and more excited to go train and more enthusiastic about my workout. So I think that's a really critical point for men to pay attention to, at least pay attention to. I mean, just keep in mind, how is your workout performance the day, of the day that you've actually ejaculated? So that's something I want to emphasize to a number of men as well.
Yeah, I think if I could just like touch on that, there's research on a lot of different things when it comes to sex and post-masturbation, and prolactin is definitely one of those things that causes a man's body to be very relaxed, post-ejaculation. But I think one of the interesting things is there's something more primal behind it. And I almost like hate to use the word because I'm, it's like you never know if you're going to like say one thing on the internet and then just get freaking blasted. But here we go. I think that there's something very conquest oriented around sex. Not that you're conquering the other person, although you can have that type of sexual experience for sure, but there is something connective about it. There's something relational about it that feels fulfilling. And in many cases, for guys especially, there is something conquest oriented. It feels like you have, for lack of a better term, it feels like you have accomplished something. And because every man knows, for the most part, for most men, it's hard to get laid. It's hard to get sex. And most men, that's their experience and that's what they know, is that it can be challenging to get sex whether you're in a relationship or not. And so when it happens, your body is designed to reward you for having done that. And when it comes to things like porn, if you use it for long enough, your brain's like, well, this is not a conquest. Like, I did not achieve anything. I didn't have to work for this. There was no effort involved in this. I literally opened up my iPhone or my laptop, went to Pornhub or whatever porn site that you watch porn on, typed in whatever it is that I wanted to watch and jerked off, and it was done, however long it took you. And that's not any type of effort. And the masculine thrives, if we just take it into the masculine energetic space, the masculine thrives in knowing and being rewarded for effort. Like if you're a man, there is some type of reward that happens, even if it's just energetically and psychologically, when you've put effort into achieving, accomplishing, doing something, that is valuable. If you've put no effort into it whatsoever and it's just given it to you, you'll take advantage of it. It won't be as meaningful to you. You might cast it aside. It won't feel as rewarding. It won't feel as satiating. Let me put it that way. It won't feel as satiating and fulfilling. And so that's just the difference between sex and porn. Is porn okay once in a while? Sure. Maybe you just need to go and get off. No big deal. But everybody knows that a good porn session and a great sex session are two completely wildly different things. So yeah.
Yeah. Great, great points there, Connor. I mean, I think that's becoming more known now, like the fact that men are now seeking out in the scenarios where men are encouraged to put in effort in order to receive a reward or pleasure. It's becoming known now that testosterone makes effort feel good. I think I even maybe mentioned that on your podcast, because it's such a powerful statement and understanding of biology. But what I really want to get into now is around the formation of healthy relationships. And I'm going to bring in my own personal, like I'm currently in a, what I would say, a very healthy relationship. You know, she respects my boundaries, where we get along very well sexually. There's a lot of, attraction, and it's working well for the time being. But there's one thing that I've noticed has seemed to appear quite a lot, which is that and I'm sure you've seen this a number of times, Connor, is that I seem to require more space. I need more space than what she typically needs. And this is because I need to keep my focus and attention on building my business. And even in the after hours, 6, 7, 8 p.m. at night, I'm actually still working and I'm still in like work mode. So how do you go about, you know, I'd imagine you've seen a number of guys in this same scenario where they say they need to focus on their work and they don't want to get distracted. How do you go about communicating to those men?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's about how you view and value the relationship and the connection. I always say that our relationships should be additive to our life. They should be restorative to our life and not detracting from our life. And, you know, if you're a man who is working on his mission and his purpose in the world and you're trying to build something, and what you're trying to build, you know, whether it's a career or a vocation or a business that really matters to you, then you're going to want to prioritize that to some degree. Now, that doesn't mean that you should, you know, denounce relationships entirely and not do them and that kind of stuff. That's not it. It's simply about having an awareness of how much space and bandwidth you have for relationship and being able to communicate that to your partner so that there's no mismatched expectations. Because what happens in a lot of relationships and where a lot of conflict happens is that there is a lack of communication around an expectation or around a reality, right? So you might say, hey, I'm building this business, and for right now, what I can really legitimately give you is 2 dates a week. I can spend, you know, twice a week, maybe on like a Wednesday night, we can go hang out. And then Saturday from like noon until, you know, whenever at night, I'm all yours. And then in those cases, really letting yourself be 110% present, or just 100%, because 110% doesn't exist, but 100% present, and really giving all of yourself to the relationship in that moment, if that's what you want. And so it's really about you deciding what it is that you want, what it is that you can offer, how much you can offer, and then being super clear and concise and communicating that to the person that you're dating. And the more that you can do that, the more that you're going to get a sense of whether or not that person is the right fit, right? My wife is a marriage and family therapist. It's another fancy way of saying a couples therapist. And so sometimes and often we work with couples together. And she's got a great saying, which is that boundaries teach other people how to treat us. Boundaries teach other people how to treat us. And what happens for a lot of us guys is that when we're mission oriented and we're trying to build something, we can miss out on communicating clearly where our boundaries are and what our limitations are, because a lot of men don't want to disappoint a woman that they're dating. Right. And there's a fear of, if I disappoint you, you might leave me, or if I disappoint you, this might not work out. And what I learned very on in my relationship with my now wife is, how did she put it? She said something along the lines of, I want to know that you're willing to disappoint me so that you do not disappoint yourself. I want to know that you're willing to disappoint me so that you do not disappoint yourself. Now, that to me was like, you know, fireworks. I was like, this is amazing. You know, like, like, you're telling me that it's okay for me to disappoint you. That's fantastic. But what she was really saying was, I want to know that you can adhere to your values, that you can adhere to your morals and your ethics and what drives you and what lights you up, even if sometimes that's not what I want. You know, even if sometimes it means that I'm going to be disappointed because there's something that I want to do that you're not interested in or that you don't have space for. Because for her, she was like, at least I know where you stand. And now there's a whole bunch of pieces that go into that. You know, you have to be with a woman that's okay with that, that's wanting that, that's, you know, that's supportive of you, that is, you know, somebody that's in your corner and advocating for you and what's best for you. And, but that's usually a good sign, is if you can find somebody that, that is living some form of that, that says, hey, I want to know that you are willing to disappoint me once in a while so that you don't disappoint yourself. What she's really saying is, I'm attracted to how much you choose you, how much Wow. you prioritize what's important for you, your mission in life, and I want you to go after that. Now, there is a balance of that. I'm going to just preface that. If that becomes the entirety of the relationship, that's going to create an imbalance, right? So we can't constantly be disappointing our partners so that we don't disappoint ourselves. But there are going to be certainly key moments where that's possible and that's necessary. So finding those moments are definitely important.
Yeah, it's a great way of explaining it and putting it. I've never heard of that before. But in terms of the challenge that you see men facing as well, particularly in relationships, and I'd imagine you've probably found this as well over the years, is the inability to switch out of work mode. So being very, very stuck in work mode, but not able to, because I mean, for myself, Connor, like I can very, very noticeably feel when I'm in work mode versus when I'm not. And when I'm not, that's when I want to hang out with my girlfriend, and that's when I want to like enjoy and, you know, enjoy, do fun things. But sometimes when I'm stuck in work mode, I really struggle to even want to do fun things or want, there's no wanting aspect. So did you want to maybe, I don't know, talk upon that ability for men to transition out of work mode into enjoyment, pleasure, you know, loving mode?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. There's a couple of things that I think are important. One is what I usually say to guys is like, you can run your relationship like a business, but you can't interact with your girlfriend, your wife, like an employee. So what I mean by that is you can be tactical with your relationship, just like you would a business. You can schedule, you know, meetings and dates, and you can be tactical with when those things happen and what they look like, and strategic, and have foresight, and all of those traits that make you probably, you know, killer in your career or in your business. They are transferable into your relationship, right? They're transferable into your relationship. Where they are likely not transferable is into how you relate to your partner, your girlfriend, your wife, etc. They're not necessarily transferable there. And that's where a lot of men get stuck, is they are trying to treat their partner like they're part of their business. So how we switch out of that is we need a process of what's called de-rolling, where we actually step out of the role that we are occupying. So if you're occupying the role of CEO, if you're occupying the role of founder, if you're occupying the role of, you know, marketing executive or sales guy or, you know, whatever it is, right? I mean, I've been a grunt in a construction crew before, laying concrete sidewalks, and, you know, loved it. And I would think about it when I went home at night and I couldn't like shut that off. Whatever role it is that you have, we all need some type of method to step out of that role and allow ourselves to be the partner. Okay. Now for everybody, that's going to look different. For some people, it might be breath work. For other people, yoga might be helpful. It might be music. It might be a workout. But there needs to be something in place, and this can be very helpful to help you transition out of the constant ruminating thoughts and into the just being present and connected emotionally, sexually, physically with the person that you love. And that transition piece can help a lot of guys to get out of it. For me, I like to do breath work. That's just the thing that works really, really well for me. I know the science behind it. It's great for getting you out of a out of your sympathetic nervous system, a sympathetic dominant nervous system, which most of us live in. And that maybe I'll just say one piece about that. The reason why most men can't step out of this more professional oriented, logical, linear space is because they're stuck in a stress response and they can't get out of the stress response. So it's not that you can't stop thinking about work. It's that you can't get yourself out of a stress response. So you actually need something to help you get out of the stress response. Because most of the men that I talk to, they're like, oh, I'm fine once I've had like two whiskeys. Then I feel like relaxed and I'm good and I can let go of work. And what they're really saying is I needed something to help me relax. So instead of booze or weed or whatever it is, you can use breath work or yoga or working out or going for a run or, you know, picking up your guitar and riffing for 15, 20 minutes. And that can be the shift out of this stress response and this very tunnel visioned perspective that, we sometimes find ourselves in that can allow us to then be present for the person that we're with, for the person that we love and want to date. So that's a really, really big one. And then you might need to appease your rational mind by actually just providing some very clear indicators of what the value is in your relationship. Because for a lot of men, where we get stuck is there's value in me ruminating about work. There's value in me constantly think about how do I close that guy? How do I solve that problem with the website? How do I deal with this branding issue, right? There's perceived value in that. Whereas we don't often look at our relationship and say, hey, if I spend the next 3 hours with my girlfriend, what's the value and benefit to me in doing so, right? It's like, well, I get to relax. I get to be with somebody I love. I get to have some good laughs, right? Now, this is all predicated on you wanting to spend time with the person that you're with. So I know that I'm just going to put that out there. But the deed rolling is the really big piece. That's something that's going to help a lot of guys create separation, especially if you are somebody that works at home. A lot of men post-pandemic have zero transition time. And so they literally finish work and walk upstairs or downstairs, and they're like straight into their family. And there's no time for themselves. There's no time to transition out of that space. And so they're literally thinking about all of those problems and carrying them like they were carrying a briefcase into the kitchen as they sit down with their girlfriend and their kids and whatever. So yeah, that's a really, really big piece.
Absolutely. That's very, very much relevant to me at the moment. I think, one thing there with establishing healthy boundaries and great communication, that's one element I think of, highly fruitful and loving and healthy relationship. When it comes to some of the other like challenges that you see men facing, particularly let's say they're in a relationship, what are some of the common things that might be like very likely to make it fall apart or for it to just for the relationship to fizzle out?
Some of the really common ones are, guys are stuck in nice guy syndrome and they are not communicating what they want or they need. They don't have boundaries. They are, we live in this very, very feminine socialized world within the West right now, where men are constantly being told, be more vulnerable, open up more. A lot of men are getting the message that in order to make the relationship work, they just need to figure out what the woman wants and then go and do that. And that is a big part of what's happening. And then there are, some men that are just rejecting that wholesale and rejecting what women need almost altogether. And so there's sort of these extremes that are happening within relationships right now. And there's not a lot of in the middle, you know, there's not a lot of center line happening. So, but there's a lot of men that don't prioritize their wants, don't prioritize what they need. They go along with what their girlfriend or wife wants constantly. You know, they find themselves watching TV shows that they don't give two shits about, that they absolutely freaking hate, right? It's like, you know, they're watching whatever, The Bachelorette or The Bachelor, or like Love Island or some bullshit with their partner. And they're like, I fucking hate this TV show. It's like, that's a good sign that you probably need some boundaries in your life. My wife has been trying to get me to watch The Bachelor for years, and she will never succeed because I refuse to watch that garbage, man. It's just terrible. I think that's a big piece. You know, men not necessarily advocating for what they want the relationship to look like, the direction that they want the relationship to go, the pace at which they want the relationship to go. Like that, that is all very important. If you find somebody that you want to be with, you can guide the direction and the pace of the relationship. And if you're, you know, if you're with a woman who, if you're with a woman who is wanting to be with you back, she is going to love that. You know, she's going to like that. Not because she wants you to call all the shots in her life, but because it's a sign that you're taking interest. So I think that those are some of the big pieces that are happening. And then where people, you know, go astray is every relationship has a shadow, which means that your pain, your hurt from your past is going to show up in the relationship, and your partner's pain and hurt is going to show up in the relationship. And it's very likely that, and this is the majority of relationships, it's very likely that your pain and hurt is going to activate the other person's and vice versa. So their insecurities are going to activate your avoidance, you know? And so when they feel insecure, you're like, get the hell away from me. You feel needy right now. Like you feel like a stage five clinger. I'm out of here. I can't deal with this. Right. So it's very common that our partner's pain activates ours, and we have to start to be more aware of that. And then I think the last thing that I would say is we in the West, especially, have burdened the relationship with being effing everything, right? It's like people expect their relationship, their partner to be their coach and their therapist and their best friend and their lover and their seductor and, like, you know, their teacher and their guide and their adventurer and just like everything. And, you know, the saying, it takes a village to raise a child. It also takes a village to raise a relationship and a marriage. And so if we want healthy, successful relationships, both individuals need to have their own level of autonomy and individuality. And both individuals need to have their own community and support where they're getting fulfilled outside of the relationship in certain areas of life. And so where a lot of guys go astray is they actually under-index the value of having really, really exceptional male relationships. And their marriage and their relationships suffer brutally because of it, because they are under-supported, and then they have to rely on the relationship for supporting them and filling in some of those gaps. So I know I just said a lot, and hopefully that doesn't make it sound like there's a shit ton of problems, but those are some of the pitfalls.
Well, this brings me to my next point, Connor, which is, and you've just, you know, summed that up beautifully and can relate to a lot of what you just said there around like the insecurities, bringing out the avoidance. And I'm just like, let me go, I'm going to go for a walk by myself or go train. Like a lot of what you said there is completely relevant and so true. And I imagine a lot of men listening to this are probably found themselves in the same position. But if men want somewhere to go, if they want to connect and meet other men to help them on their mission and to help them become a better man in their relationship, where can they go? Is this something that you have, you know, you've pioneered, you've built a community around? Like how can men, you know, work on these areas?
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of communities out there that you can find. You just have to find one that resonates with you that is dedicated to, you know, how you're wanting to better yourself as a man. You know, I've built a great organization, and we have something called the Alliance, and that has, you know, 500 plus guys from around the world in it. And they are all dedicated to being better men, better husbands, better fathers, better business leaders, just better leaders in general. And so finding that type of community where you can be transparent about where you're struggling or what you're dealing with or what you're working on, getting feedback, getting accountability, those types of things are going to serve you in a very, very deep way. But you have to find, you have to kind of find the person that you resonate with. And, you know, usually men gravitate to my stuff when they've struggled with self-esteem, when they've struggled with infidelity, when they've struggled with, you know, setting boundaries and creating direction and having a deeper level of self-leadership in their life, when they've struggled with impulse control. That's a big one. And that's mostly because those are things that I had to address in my life. You know, those are things that I talk about openly, that I've worked on and worked through in my life. And so those are usually the guys that it's usually the like high performing, high functioning dudes that come my way, or the guys that are like, I know I have way more in me, but I don't know how to get it out of me. And those are generally the guys that come our way. And so, yeah, but source out a community for yourself. There's tons and tons that are out there.
Yeah, you're doing a phenomenal job. And I think it's, I very much respect what you do, Connor, because, you know, I've been in and amongst a men's circle before. I've been in like a men's, you know, retainer sort of system. And it was, honestly, it changed my perspective of myself so dramatically. It changed the way that I showed up to the world and just made me a better man overall. Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest takeaway that I got from joining a community like that was the fact that I'm not the only guy thinking about this. And the fact that I realized that, oh my God, like this other guy in the rooms also said, he brought up exactly what I was thinking. That fact of just like normalizing like these thoughts and that inner dialogue that you mentioned before just made me feel so much better, that it made me realize, hey, I'm actually not that messed up. Like I'm just like the other guy in the room. And so then now we've been able to like bond on that sheer fact. And now we're able to connect, and just that connection there by talking about that same dilemma that we're both facing, just it minimized the intensity of the pain. It just reduced that severity. And so this is why I know these workshops and these groups and communities can be so powerful. And this is something that I very much learned during lockdown, during COVID, because, you know, Melbourne, we were the second most lockdown city in the world. It was only during that time that I really understood the importance of like having really high quality social connections, because without that, I was like, you know, I'm a typical biohacker, tracking sleep, tracking energy, and then I was tracking like mood and happiness, and that element of my lifestyle was taking a massive hit. I'm like, what, you know, what's changed? And it's like definitely the lack of social connections. And now if you look at me like 2 years later, I have so many widespread, amazing friendship groups, to the point where it's almost to the point now where I am a completely different person to how I was 2 to 3 years ago, where all I was doing, Connor, was just working on my business, just working my ass off 14-hour days in the garage, you know, just burning, like just really pushing very hard. But now I'd say like I've definitely got more of a balance in that regard. I've got a great widespread distribution of friends from different areas. And yeah, I think it's an important point to emphasize to men listening in. And I'm very impressed with what you've developed. And we'll make sure to, if people want to connect with you, Connor, if they want to, you know, learn more about your work and your services, where can they find you?
Best place to go is just mantalks.com, or you can find me on Instagram at mantalks. I also have a podcast and YouTube channel that's been doing really well lately. You can just go to youtube.com/mantalks. Everything's basically mantalks. Yeah. You can just find me on all of those channels.
Yeah, awesome. I'll make sure to leave that linked in the show notes. But otherwise, Connor, was there anything else, maybe like one final message you wanted to, you know, voice out to those that are listening, anything that you wanted to say before we wrap up?
I mean, I'd probably just touch on what you were talking about. You know, during the pandemic, I talked about this concept that I came up with, which is just that isolation equals amplification, sort of like a mathematical equation for what happens psychologically when we are isolated. So when a human being is isolated, it amplifies what they are experiencing internally. Meaning, if you are a man who is anxious and then you isolate, you are going to amplify that anxiety. If you're a man that has depression and then you isolate, you're going to amplify that depression and so forth. And so, you know, there's a great saying by an American therapist and psychologist who said, grief is meant to be witnessed, right? All of our, we're social creatures, and all of our experiences, whether it's our insecurities, our fears, our doubts, our grief, our sadness, our anger, those things are meant to be witnessed by other people. And so our work is to have the courage to go into places and spaces where we can develop relationships with people, where those parts of us that we are struggling to deal with, that we're sort of wrestling with and we haven't figured out, where other people can see those parts of us and their lives might have some clue into how we can better reckon with that part of us that we're actually dealing with. So that's what I would just leave people with, and hopefully that's supportive for them.
Yeah, no, phenomenal stuff. Connor, you know, this has been a pleasure chatting. We could definitely, you know, do a round two. There's plenty to cover, but yeah, definitely, man. Keep doing what you're doing. I'm a big fan. I'm sure my audience will definitely be. I'm sure they'll gravitate towards your content. And yeah, we'll definitely stay in touch. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Likewise, brother. Thank you very much.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hey, welcome to the Next Wave podcast. Consider us your chief AI officer in your business. My name is Matt Wolf. I have the number one YouTube channel in the AI space. I also run futuretools.com, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Lands, founder of lore.com. We want to bring you the latest AI news and trends, show you how you can use AI in your business and personal life, and help make it super easy for you to understand and execute. We're going to equip you with the knowledge to thrive in this upcoming wave of change.